Here we go. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I've been thinking about doing a series of talks on aspects of our practice. So I want to say a few words about the fundamental activity of our practice, and then talk a little bit today about one aspect. Last week, Shinshu started talking about the Genjo Koan, which I'm really always looking forward to revisit. And she mentioned the first line, to carry yourself forward and experience myriad things as delusion, that myriad things come forth and experience themselves as awakening. One translation, right? You can find others. There are many, many, many aspects to this and many questions we can ask. We can say, if the self is carried forward, who carries it? What carries it? Like, really? Is there another self? If not a self, what? How do we understand the self that's carried forward, and why bother to try and understand it? This line points to a fundamental power, transformative power of our practice. And that is the shift away from a belief, a self-experience, a belief that one is simply a separate entity among separate entities relating to things. A shift from that to a life that is based in the activity of all beings, where we know ourselves to be this dynamic relationality of all beings. A life that includes individuality but is not bound by it. So this shift transforms who we are, how we experience ourselves, how we relate to others, how we relate to our world, what we think the world is. And it's not abstract. It's not something that we just think about. The thinking mind can certainly be a part of it, but it is an activity. It is a practice. It is coming to know life directly and concretely. To make this shift, we need to look carefully at our lives and cultivate a way of life that sees every aspect of our lives as what we call a Dharma gate, as an opportunity of transformation. Zazen opens up both an intimate knowledge of who we are, but also the vastness of our being, opens us up to that. Ritual envelops us, in a way, in a context that can touch and transform us in ways that thinking cannot, and we may not even notice how this works. Work practice, how we move and respond to the people and things in our world, study what we ingest. As I'm fond of saying, Saint Benedict said we should eat the teachings to the point where we belch the teachings. We should eat them. They become part of our bones. They change the basis of our understanding and our response. Art, music, poetry, we encounter these things. They touch us and move us. We may not be able to say what happens. The physicality of our being, our relational lives with other human beings, with teachers, friends, enemies. Once years ago, I asked permission from a Tibetan teacher to do Tibetan-style prostrations. And so he taught me, Lama Tarchan used to live in Watsonville, very kindly taught me and adapted it for a Zen practitioner. And one of the practices is that you put your enemy on the altar. You bow. I thought to myself, I don't have any enemies. Then I thought, oh wait, there is that one person, you know. Yeah. So we have to be honest with ourselves, right? We have to not be haughty. One of the other things I did recently is graduates is a Jodo Shin minister in Hawaii, and I asked him to connect me with a Soto Zen teacher in Hawaii, who has written a lot of songs, Soto Zen songs, and a lot of them are really dopey. You know, along the lines of, Buddha loves me, this I know, you know. But are we too good for that? You know? Are we too smart to be taught by songs such as that? So one of my ideas is to have a ukulele band and to sing really silly Buddhist songs. Yeah. So there are many more dimensions to our practice. And we may or may not understand what they are. But, you know, is understanding the point? Ever? Can practice take place without understanding? I think so. If we look at the multiple ways our practice takes shape, we see that though developing understanding is a good thing, if it's not in the service of lived practice, it's just a long, winding diversion from what Suzuki Roshi tells us is the most important thing, our inmost request. It doesn't transform us. Without living close to this inmost request, we lose the kind of sacred thread of our lives. We play around in abstractions that have no meaning for us or others. We are foolish, as my Jodo Shin friends like to say. We are wounded, we are limited. That's a fact. Katagiri Roshi said, I really like this, so if you've heard this before, forgive me. We are all more or less ignorant and crazy, but it doesn't matter. We are already ignorant, so we must be right in the middle of ignorance. That is all we have to do. But usually we add something extra to ignorance. We hate it, and our life goes away from us. How can we be free from ignorance? How can we take care of ignorance? I say we practice day by day. Katagiri Roshi goes on to say, if we see life as an object separate from us, it is easy for us to create fear and anxiety and confusion. When we see our life, we feel many things. This is called experience. Of course, it is okay, but it is not the total picture of the way we live. We must put it aside and be one with our life. That is all we have to do. This is most important. be one with your life. Sounds easy, doesn't it? Or just be one with your life. We could stop right there. See you all next week. But we have to know how. What Kadigiri Roshi is telling us is, if we're not fooled by our ignorance, if we are not fooled by our ignorance, our limited self can be caught in the latest version of our neurotic tendencies. But we're not bound by it. We know that it's not the whole story. Not by a long shot. We return, we breathe, we know what is not bound. We don't need to hate the limited self. We don't need to be fooled by it. We don't need to hate delusion. We don't need to spend our lives trying to rid ourselves of a self that we could never be rid of. We're human. We have selves. That's a fact. Selves organize perception in categories, create meaning and structure. They are inevitably incomplete. We tend to think we're separate, build cockeyed notions of our world. Look at all the harm our cockeyed notions do on a regular basis. And we should work to rid ourselves of these cockeyed notions. Open our minds and hearts. That's a good thing, a necessary thing. But we should also not be fooled into thinking that we can perfect this limited self. That's a heartbreaking effort. There's another way, a more inclusive way, the way of Zazen, the way of relationship, the way of transformation. So what we can do is care for our lives in a way that transforms them and benefits not only us, but all beings. We are inextricably interwoven with the environment in which we exist. This can be very dangerous. We can be easily swayed by a crowd and go off hooting and hollering to do harm. But it is also a means by which we can be transformed in a way that gives life to us and all beings, in a way that aligns with our deepest intention. Kadigiri Roshi says we must be one with our lives. This is the spirit of our practice. But again, we ask how. How? Each day, we ask how. Each moment, each situation, we ask how. How in this relationship? How at my desk? How? How? The fundamental shift that occurs when we know our lives to be of this life, every day, is how we are transformed. This is a life of practice. In work practice, in Zazen, in ritual, in chanting, cleaning, cooking, serving, answering the phone, listening to our cranky neighbor, eating, taking care of elders, working on the computer, digging a ditch, seeing a client. We talk about this all the time at Ocean Gate, don't we? We're always talking about driving and working. And we do this not because it's a path for lay people, as if that's a secondary condition. Like there's the real practice and then there's the dumbed down practice for lay people. No, that's not why we do it. We do it because it's the only path in Soto Zen. No matter where you are, no matter what clothes you've got on, no matter whether you're out in the mountains in a monastery or digging a ditch or answering a phone. Day by day, we return to this world. We care for our lives in this way. And we come to know that we are life itself, not a walled-off version of it. So we become we say we become intimate with our lives. I want to tell you a story. This is an old story by a bunch of old monks in China. The 42nd ancestor, Ryozan Enkan, was the attendant of the 41st ancestor, Do'on Kanchi. And as such, he carried his robe for him. So he was his attendant, so he carried his robe. At one time, his teacher needed to put on the robe, so Ryozan handed it to him, Do'on, the teacher. And Do'on said to his disciple, "What is the business under the patched robe?" Ryozan said, "Nothing." He had no answer. The teacher said, "To wear this robe and not understand the great matter is the greatest suffering. To wear this robe and not understand the great matter is the greatest suffering." We can think of this as to have this precious human life and not understand the great matter is the greatest suffering. So then the teacher says, "You ask me." You can imagine. The teacher's like, the student's like, "Whoa, I've got to ask." The student asks the teacher, "What is the business under the patched robe?" The teacher said, "Intimacy, intimacy." This was the moment when Ryokan woke up. He bowed to his teacher in gratitude. The teacher asked, "What have you understood? Can you express it?" Ryokan said, "What is the matter under this robe? Intimacy." The teacher said, "Intimacy and even greater intimacy." Isn't that lovely? You know, this is always available to us. Always, always, always. Intimacy. There is a Japanese phrase that's often used in Zen teachings. Menmitsu no kafu. Menmitsu no kafu. Mitsu is intimacy. This intimacy, this deep interconnection. And men refers to a white cloth, closely woven white cloth. Each thread of this cloth is thin, not strong. It's insignificant. It's just a thin little thread. But together they make a strong cloth capable of doing the work it needs to do. Our lives are like this. They're woven of small events, little insignificant events. Whether you set your coffee cup down with a slam or set it carefully, whether you acknowledge a coworker, whether you take time to change the toilet paper roll, right? These things are minor, insignificant, unless you're living with someone and you habitually forget to change the toilet paper. But when we attend to each small, seemingly insignificant aspect, we weave a cloth of our life, of strength and beauty. All of these little things are woven into a cloth. Even if it's stained and shows wear, perhaps particularly if it's stained and show where it shows where, you know, like beet stains that never come out, or, you know, when you cook with saffron and you have a wooden spoon and it becomes yellowed. You know, you clean up your messes with this woven cloth and it gets worn. And there's a beauty in that. So each act, each dimension of our lives deserves our attention. With each small act, we build a life of practice. We build a habit of attention and care. Each is an opportunity to be delivered to a different experience of self in the world, to benefit ourselves and others and be unbound from the limitations of ourself. We live with generosity, with respect, with awareness. We are of the world. So when we're of the world, we can respond in ways that are helpful, right? Menmitsu no kafu is intimacy with everything. Careful consideration of everything. Generosity, respect, awareness, connection. Knowing that we are not different than this connected reality. So recognition of the interwovenness of our world, the interdependence of our world. It's a meditation instruction. All of these teachings are meditation instructions. When we sit, are we intimate with this? This crummy, one of the teachers at San Francisco Zen Center said once that he thought he should give a Dharma name of greedy bug to someone. And not because he didn't like this person, but because that's a part of who we are. We're flawed. We're not these perfected beings. So we're close with that. We're intimate with that. We take care of each detail. We devote ourselves to caring for each detail. There's a wonderful scholar named Thomas Kasulis. He wrote a book. I think it was the first book I read on Zen, called Zen Action, Zen Person. And he wrote, we meet not the minds, but people, flesh and blood, thinking and feeling human beings. We meet an incarnate person, even if that person is only perceivable as a voice on the phone or as a style of writing. If we want to learn about Zen Buddhism, we must realize that the knowledge they exemplify does not come through the application of dogmas or principles. The teachings derive rather from the unselfconscious assimilation of a way of living and acting. Choosing to be intimate, moment after moment after moment. Menmitsu no kafu is the enactment of the teachings of interdependence. It is not an abstract teaching to be considered, like on a bookshelf someplace. It is alive and ordinary in our lives as they are. And we can only understand it by doing. We attend, we listen to what is before us, we care for the details, the actual person, dish, plant, car, toilet paper roll. This is not mindfulness of something, you know? People talk about mindfulness a lot. You know? I'm mindful of this, I'm mindful of that. I'm mindful of this. Yeah, that's good. But what is it like to know I'm not separate from this? What happens in my relationship to this? If I'm mindful of it, okay. If I'm intimate with it, right? So this is living in our entire world. So important right now, but I won't get off on that again. So crucial. When we do this, we shift the center of gravity from our lives from an assumption that we are a separated, isolated being who can use other things to a life alive with the interplay of all being. This is not something we do in a calculated manner. We just do it. Just do it. Just answer the phone. Just take out the garbage. Just when you come in, put your shoes down on the rack. We don't have any designs. We just do it and see what happens. This is realization, whether we know it or not. So we take care of how we place our shoes. Respect them and care for them. they carry us all over the place without complaint, right? We care for the cushions and chairs in here. They're just always sitting here, waiting for us to come, patient as hell. Oh, good morning. Good afternoon. Please sit on me. Our cars, our dishes, the people at work who have their own lives. Their value is not based on what they can do for us. They have their own reality, their own world. So think about this. See, thinking comes in. I recommend this practice to you. When you're done with a knife, set it on the counter. When you wipe down the counter, do it with care. When you drive your car, pay attention. There's no need to be precious about it. It's quite ordinary. Just do it. So, will you try it? Try it for a week. I'll be here next week. You can tell me all about it. Honestly, how many, say hallelujah, how many of you will commit to doing this for a week? All right? Good. Intimacy, listening, attending. Do it for a week. See what happens. Okay? Questions?